You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program to put some money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing. We got a triple threat program lined up for you today. Mark Lawrence, Chris Meaney, and Bill Waters. We're shaking things up a little bit on the show today. Wilbur will join us in a couple of minutes off the top because he's a very busy man. And it's funny. Most of the time, guests that give you a hard time and jockey for slots and times, normally they're not very big or they're not very rich. But Bill Waters is a rich guy. He's a busy man. So, you know what? We'll do this for Wilbur because we love Bill Waters. We'll talk some NHL hockey with Wilbur. We'll talk NHL hockey with Meaney. We're going to talk Philadelphia Eagle draft with Meaney. Mark Lawrence going to join us. We're going to talk NBA basketball and everything else in between. We're going to run the gauntlet. But we spent a lot of time over the past couple of days talking about the Chicago Bears blockbuster deal in which they moved up and acquired Mitch Trubisky. And while it was insane to give up as much as they did give up for Mitch Trubisky, I remember last year people were saying the same thing about Carson Wentz. And, you know, before we anoint Carson Wentz a six-time Pro Bowl quarterback, the fact of the matter is it looks like the Philadelphia Eagles have their quarterback of the future because they shook things up and they moved up the draft board. So I'm not throwing Trubisky under the bus here. I'm more so throwing the Chicago Bears under the bus because they didn't have to trade up to get Mitch Trubisky. Trubisky might be good, unlike Mike Glennon, who we know is not very good. Now, nobody is shocked that the Chicago Bears drafted a quarterback, although this just goes back to what we were talking about earlier. Why the hell, if the Chicago Bears, if Pace liked Trubisky so much, why did you turn around and give Mike Glennon $45 million, 19 of which is freaking guaranteed? 19 million of it, he's getting 19 mil, no matter what. Which leads me to call out Mike Glennon. As Mike Glennon says, he feels cheated on. Now, nobody expected Mike Glennon to be happy that they drafted a quarterback. You know what? Glennon's a career backup. He's 27 years old. He figures, hey, these guys just gave me all this money. They must want to make me the starting quarterback. I've got a future here. Well, you know what? You know, we've said this before, and we're going to say it again. You're the guy until you're not the guy. You know, you're still the guy right now. Trubisky's not the guy. And either way, cheated on. What the hell, are you guys married? What do you mean? What do you mean cheated on? They don't owe you a damn thing. You never thrown a damn pass for them. If you're Mike Glennon, you just won the freaking lottery. I got to tell you what, if you give me $19 million guaranteed this year, you can cheat on me all you want, all right? I've been cheated on for nothing. Like, I've been cheated on before. I didn't get anything out of it. I got nothing but grief and misery out of it. I didn't get night to cheat it on. I don't know if you understand the definition of cheated on, Glennon. A football team and a professional sports organization giving you $45 million, 19 million of it guaranteed, is not being cheated on. You know, the fact of the matter is, dude, you know, Dak Prescott's going to make $685,000 this year. The quarterback that you were backing up in Tampa, Jameis Winston, you know, he's making like $6.5 million. You feel cheated on? Cheated? Like, seriously? Like, cheated? Like seriously, your contract is next to like Brock Osweiler, and dare I say Brock Osweiler is better than Mike Glennon. Now, I will admit this. I was somewhat surprised to see that Mike Glennon's actually thrown for 30 touchdown passes and only 15 interceptions. And I'm thinking, how is that possible? You know, he sucks. How is that possible? Garbage time. That's how it's possible. Garbage time. Because Mike Glennon is a garbage quarterback. He is Brock Osweiler 2.0. You know, this dude just won the freaking lottery. You know, Mike Glennon saying he's getting cheated on. It's like a homeless dude sitting outside a liquor store and some guy rolls up to him and gives him a bag with $100,000 in it. And then, you know, 2 minutes later, gives another homeless guy $100,000. And then you're pissed off because the dude gave money to someone else. You know, if you're Mike Glennon right now, you should be running around, man. It's like the episode of The Simpsons when Burns is all high and stuff. Hey, Burns, he's out of it. Now's the time to go. You know what I'm saying? You know, now's the time to tell everyone, hey, the Chicago Bears are giving money to everybody. They just gave me $45 million. So the bottom line is, Mike Glennon, and let me repeat this once again, as one of the best linemen ever, Randy Cross, says this line often, and I've repeated this line often. You're the guy until you're not the freaking guy. And in your case, you were just the guy for a little bit shorter than a lot of guys. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Mark Lawrence will join us in a couple of moments. Chris Meany will join us in studio. There's a lot of stuff to get to. There's a ton of stuff going on in the world of sports, including the National Hockey League playoffs. The Rangers were a desperate team last night, and they played one. They played like a desperate team. The Nashville Predators, well, the Predators are just on a roll, and everything's going their way. And everything went their way last night. A young, explosive defensive corps getting it done. But the hockey world talking about the Sidney Crosby situation. Crosby's out tonight. Connor Sheary is out. Everybody's out for the Pittsburgh Penguins. But Bill Waters is in on Game Time Decisions right now. Former assistant to the general manager. Toronto Maple Leafs, longtime player, agent, broadcaster, and superstar Wilbur Bill Waters joins us. Bill, it's always a pleasure, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Gabe. Thanks for the flowering introduction. I believe you read it exactly the way I sent it to you.
Yeah, you know what? My condolences, Bill. I hear it's pretty hot in Florida. I got to tell you, it's like 5 degrees in Toronto right now. So I'm not shedding any tears for you.
No, I know that, and I'm not going to complain. But it's getting summer has come. And when it comes, the sun is hot, and I was out this morning, and then when I came in at noon, I think I came in too early because the air conditioning, as you know, can really grab your throat, and I've got that deep radio voice that I wished I'd always had, but
no, it's
only going to last for a couple of days.
Yeah, and Andy Frost just called. He wants his pipes back.
Yeah, that's right.
He wants his pipes
back.
Do you
know Andy's son is quite a hockey player?
I didn't know that.
Yes, he is. He plays in Sault Ste. Marie, and he's not too shabby.
You know
not
what?
Too shabby.
I'll keep my eye on that. You know what's really funny, too, Wilbur? There's a goalie in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, Gabriel Morenci. Same name.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah. People were asking.
You know the mother?
Yeah, Peter, you know what? I actually, no kidding aside, we started following each other on Twitter. And I just asked him, I said, where were you born, by the way? Like, you know, who's your mother? Just, you know, he's 18 years old, Bill. It's a possibility, right?
That's right.
Especially if he's good. That's when I'll be coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah, that's right. You should get some kind of reward, if not just personal aggrandizement.
I'll be like one of those low-life, like, NBA dads that come out of the woodwork after 18 years. You know,
yeah, that's right.
That's my boy. That's my boy. So all kidding aside, you know who is my boy? And I don't know what it is with people, especially people in Canada. They all dislike and, dare I say, hate Sidney Crosby until he saves Canada's ass in the Olympics and wins them a gold medal. And then, they all love Crosby, but it's like it's open season. And I almost want to rewind on this because, you know, for the record, you know, I'm hearing people and our cameraman who's a Crosby hater. Oh, Crosby fell into Niskanen. Yeah, he fell into him. He's got Ovechkin hacking away like Babe Ruth. Where was the penalty on that, Bill? Like, since when is, like, slashing someone in the back and high-sticking him in the face become legal in the National Hockey League?
No, and Gabe, it annoys me as well. I can't stand to watch Alexander Ovechkin perform as a professional. I think he's disrespectful of the game. He's disrespectful of everything and everybody but himself. And if you saw what he did to Sidney Crosby, to the extent that Paul Coffey had headlines in Sportsnet.ca yesterday morning saying it was the most vicious two-hander he has ever seen. This guy almost cut his neck off. And if you know anything about concussions, and I know you do, sometimes concussion syndromes come from neck injuries, whether it be a woodchopper's ball like Ovechkin tried to perform on Ovechkin, or whether it, or on Crosby, or whether it comes from a hit directly to the top of the head and jams your neck. That notwithstanding, anybody that knows anything about hockey knows that Crosby doesn't come ass backwards across the crease. Now, Eddie Olczyk said he was off balance. Eddie's one of my favorite guys. You got to give me the explanation as to why he was off balance.
Yes.
When I saw the replay and I saw Ovechkin's stick hit him like an axe, and then he pulls it back and it hits him on the helmet, I knew what happened to Sidney Crosby. He may have been knocked out before Niskanen touched him. And for them not to even look at it, Gabe, is far beyond my appreciation. I am such a hockey fan. I love the game. I don't love the people in the game, particularly in the Department of Player Safety, to the extent that they were all over the Pittsburgh building yesterday explaining why they did what they did. Two things they did. They didn't have a hearing in the case of Niskanen. And number two, they completely missed Ovechkin's two-hand chop that Paul Coffey calls the worst two-hander he's ever seen.
Nobody's talking about the chop. I'm glad you're as passionate about this. Nobody's talking about that. Exactly. Everyone talks about the hit. That's what the first thing I noticed.
The hit. If you go up and down the lineups of both teams, Gabe, there's only one man in that building on those lineups that would have done what he did to Crosby. Ovechkin is a disgrace to the game and everything it represents. He's a gutless fool.
All right, so the Washington Capitals were a desperate team. And I can't be a hypocrite here, Bill, in the sense that I cry for yesteryear when they were tough and then sort of bitch when a team goes in here and goes balls out. I agree. I think Ovi, it was a vicious slash. I think Niskanen, I think he knew exactly what he was doing. But what really grinds my gears about this as well is where's the reaction of the Pittsburgh Penguins? We're talking about the best player in the world, the best player of the generation, the best player in the league since Wayne Gretzky, lying on the ice, getting hacked, getting elbowed in the face. I don't care about instigators. I don't care about suspensions, man. Somebody's got to freaking pay. Like if Chris Chelios is on the ice, Ron Hextall, Claude Lemieux, Guy Carboneau, will go down the list, Ty Domi, Scott Stevens, players, this just doesn't happen. And we can talk about, it's the new rules, but all these punks in the NHL, they're great athletes, but they're all slashing each other, and then they all mouth off and skate away. It's time somebody gets punched in the face.
Well, it is, and there's nobody that can do it or will do it on either team except the Wilson kid. What do you think, Gabe, if you were on the ice and you confronted Ovechkin, what do you think he would do?
He would cower.
What do you think he would do?
He would cower.
He would do nothing. He'd sour away and go to the bench and make a fool of you and probably draw an unsportsmanlike penalty. Too tight on the game. I'm with you. I think they should have had someone retaliate in kind, and they will. It won't be this year. They will not bring up Sestito and make a mockery of the game. The game has been made enough of a mockery based on how they've handled the Crosby incident. They missed the essence of the incident and didn't even investigate the last cross-check that really made his head ring. But the first one was Ovechkin's two-hander over the neck and the shoulder, and then pulling the stick back and hitting him on the side of the helmet. It's all pictorially very evident, and you can't see that on an iPhone. You have to show it on a screen in the coach's room. Everybody in Pittsburgh knew what happened except the people in the safety department. That is hilariously incompetent.
Normally, I've always thought it was insane that the National Hockey League gauges suspensions by the injury. You know, they don't have an intent clause, essentially. You know, by Bettman's logic, if you shot at someone, you didn't hit them. Well, you know, you didn't hit them. Which, you know, this is what I don't understand. Like, Crosby's out right now. So how does this impact the game tonight? How do the Penguins respond? Malkin has always been able to put the team on his shoulders in these spots, but now Sheary's out. You got to believe, you know, Letang's already been out. You know, how long can Fleury play as well as he's played? Does it catch up to them? And rightfully or wrongfully so, fairly or unfairly, do the Capitals now have a little bit of mojo? Because, hey, we're knocking these guys around. They're not doing anything about it. We just knocked out their best player.
Well, your point's well made. I think that the difference between the two teams is TEAM, team, leadership. Things that Washington does not have. The Pittsburgh Penguins play much better as a team than Washington ever thought of. Washington does not have a leader, not a single solitary leader. And they cannot perform the way Pittsburgh does on a 60-minute basis. Having said all this, Gabe, we'll find out tonight. I thought they played admirably well for losing their best player.
Yep.
I knew there would be no retaliation because that's not the way the game is, and the referees would respond by giving them unsportsmanlike, because nobody on Washington will fight except the Wilson kid. And quite frankly, I don't want to step into Wilson and get the bejeebers knocked out of me. So I empathize with your theory, but it's not applicable because of the incompetence of the officiating. One of the things that I've always maintained, Gabe, is the level of officiating at the NHL. It's the best in the world. Well, the best in the world has slipped gravely in these playoffs. That game on Monday night, you knew what Washington were doing. Ovechkin was running from the faceoff dot to behind the net, hitting any little guy with his back to him. That's the only way he hits you. So, and no calls. Just let him bounce off. 250 pounds. Knocks a 165-pound kid into the glass. Hopefully he'll hit him and concuss him. That's not hockey. Let's get with it. You have to show some respect for your player. That's your fellow players. You don't have to treat them like they're kid brothers, but you don't take their livelihood away from them. And that's what Ovechkin tried to do with Crosby. I have no time for Alexander Ovechkin for anything other than going back to the KHL and never returning to North America.
Bill Waters with us on Game Time Decisions. It's too bad that Bill didn't share his real opinions and speak his mind today with us. Bill, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy the game tonight.
I will enjoy it, and Pittsburgh will win it. And, Gabe, then we'll talk about what Mr. Ovechkin's going to do. Otherwise, it's a perilous opportunity for the Washington Capitals, who couldn't beat Pittsburgh with a full team. This may be their opportunity, but I think Pittsburgh can still do it, and I hope they do. And it's been fun sharing my insight with you.
Always a pleasure, Bill.
Thanks, Gabe.
There's Bill Waters for us. Got me fired up right now. I don't think Bill likes Ovechkin very much. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Let's talk some football. Let's talk some basketball and a little baseball with Mark Lawrence, one of the best in the business. Playbook.com, available on your mobile device. Just go to the Google Store. Best newsletter in the business. Has a daily newsletter, a coffee club in your inbox every morning with a couple of interesting tidbits and ATS trends for the day. Most people drink coffee. I drink Mark Lawrence's coffee club newsletter. Mark Lawrence, always a pleasure. Mark, how you doing?
Hey, I like your taste, Gabe. I'm doing real well. How you doing?
All right, so I find it. You know what I often think the same, Mark? You talked about the New England Patriots. And South Point released regular season win totals, first win totals off the board. And I discussed earlier in the week how the Patriots had the highest number at 11. And generally, you know, you and I, you know, we're not looking to invest on a team. I don't want to have to win 12 games to win a bet. Generally, I'm looking at the bottom end, middle end, etc. But I took a look at the New England Patriots schedule. And it's no secret that they raided the Buffalo Bills, got Mike Gillisley. They got Gilmore. They bring in Cooks. Oh, yeah, they won last year. They didn't even have Gronkowski. So, you know, dare I say they're going to be even freaking better next year. And you know what? 11 looks pretty good, and it looked pretty good to some sharp guys because they already bet it up to 11.5.
They didn't have Brady for the first four games last year either, so that just shows you how powerful this football team is. And I couldn't disagree with the game. I'm usually looking to make under cases for NFL season win totals, but I couldn't go under on a Patriots total here. Their schedule's going to be a little bit difficult, salty, if you will, in the last fourth of the season, the last quarter down the stretch. But I think they can handle and take care of business. I can understand why that move went from 11 to 11.5.
That's right. November's their toughest month. But let's look at the schedule here a little bit. Three of their first four games are at home. You know, so they host the Chiefs on that Thursday nighter. They go to the Saints. They win a track meet there. They beat the Saints there. They come back home. Couple of tough games, but, you know, let's say it's Deshaun Watson in his third game. He's not going in there and winning that game. You know, the Panthers aren't going to beat the Patriots in Foxborough. So, boom, they're 4-0 out of the gate. Then they're on a Thursday nighter at Tampa. The fact that it's a Thursday nighter will have the Patriots' attention. 5-0. Then all that, they're at the Jets, 6-0. Then they host the Chargers and Falcons. Let's say even we're being generous. They're 7-1 after eight games, if not 8-0.
Well, you know, the other thing, Gabe, is they're going to be favored every football game they play this year.
Yeah.
And you got to go back to the last time any team in the NFL was favored every game they played was 2007. It was also the New England Patriots in that 18-1 season they had. And unbelievably, in those 19 games, they were double-digit favorites 14 times. So we might see a lot of that from New England again this year.
And there might be a couple of pick-ems. Obviously, as the year goes, stuff can change. But Cantor Gaming has released odds for every game. Patriots favorite in every game. So they cruise through. Let's say they stumble and they're 6-2 even. And I think that's being overly optimistic if you hate the Patriots. We'll go into November. This is where it's a little tough for them. They go to Denver. They go to Oakland. They host the Dolphins. They go to the Bills. That's a chunky month for them right there.
Yeah, they're going to be tested that month unquestionably, and they could well do that entering that month undefeated. So if they do that, suddenly that pressure is squarely going to be on their shoulders. They'll be the A team, the number one team on everybody's schedule this year for two reasons. One, because of the Super Bowl champion, and two, because they're going to be the team to beat again this year.
And we should note right after that run, so they're at Denver, they're at Oakland, they host the Dolphins, and then they're at the Bills. But then they're boom, they're right back on the road again to open up December at Miami, at Pittsburgh. It's a little bit of a tough run here, but I swear to God, and as a Bills fans, I know this, and it's like deliberate, Mark. It's like they give the Bills and the Patriots the last game of the year every year to screw us, to keep us out if we're close, and to just give the Patriots that little edge. You know what I mean? Hey, you know what? We'll just give them the Jets and the Bills in the last 2 weeks here, just in case they need the incentive to get home field.
But whose fault is that? It's the Jets and the Bills' fault because they happen to stink, and New England takes advantage of that. They just happen to live in that bad neighborhood with New England here. They have to clean up their own house, first of all, the Jets and the Bills do, to be noteworthy, if you will. But if they'll be in the hunt, either of those two football teams, I'll be a little bit surprised this year.
Hey, Zay Jones. The Bills had a nice draft, though, Mark. Trey White, Zay Jones, the Dawkins kid out of Temple was a freaking steal. And what's your take on Nate Peterman? I think this kid might be a starter in the NFL. He might be the next Kirk Cousins, this guy.
I like him. He was at Tennessee. He transferred out of Tennessee. He wasn't going to beat out Josh Dobbs, so he moved to Pittsburgh. I think he's a pro football quarterback. We saw that last year, and I think he's going to be a starter in this league inside of 2 years. I texted Brian Blessing, our good buddy from Buffalo, when they drafted Peterman. I said, 2 years, Peterman will be the starting quarterback for the Buffalo Bills.
I told the same thing to Cameron to Drew, and he laughed. I told him, I said, 2 years from now, Peterman's the Buffalo Bill quarterback. Oh, he's not. He's terrible. He's a fifth-round pick. Tom Brady's a sixth-round pick, all right? But you know, you mentioned the Jets and the Bills. I like the Bills draft. The Jets, I don't know what they're doing, Mark. I like the Adams pick, but I think the Jets drafted six safeties, didn't they? What's the deal with that? Who takes two safeties? You're trying to rebuild your whole team, and you take two guys at the back end. I don't get that.
Well, they're a quarterback-starved team, like the Cleveland Browns quarterback-starved team. You'd think that would have been priority one for the Jets in this draft some way, somehow, at the sixth slot, that they would have maybe made a move possibly for a Deshaun Watson. They didn't. They're building it another way here. I still don't understand what they're doing, their method of their madness here. They're still the New York Jets.
All right, let's speaking of Cleveland, Cleveland gets Deshaun Kizer. They also get the Toronto Raptors tonight. it's no secret that the Toronto Raptors suck, and there's some professional analysis for people. They suck, all right? They suck in Game 1, the playoff series. They're 1-12 all time now in Game 1, a playoff series. They've lost 7 consecutive Game 1s. But what's interesting, I was wondering, all right, how do they do in Game 2s? So the last seven Game 1s they've lost, not too bad, in fact, Mark. They're 4-2 against the spread in Game 2s after losing those Game 1s.
You go back and look at Cleveland, the other side of the coin there, Gabe. Cleveland, in Game 2 off a double-digit Game 1 win, they're only a 30% point spread play. So the Cavaliers play down in Game 2. Toronto tends to play up in Game 2. I think this will be a much different basketball game than the first one. Cleveland won the game by double digits, but it wasn't a blowout. It wasn't what we had witnessed Houston hammering San Antonio by. I think Toronto takes this game right down to the wire here in Cleveland tonight.
You know, it was a weird game. You know, Raptor fans are really down on the Raps, but they were actually in that game. They were in it. They were training. They were going. Listen, it took the Raptors a couple of minutes. They were just playing the Bucks. They were slowing it down. Suddenly, you're playing at the Q and it's raining threes. It took the Raptors about 20 minutes to wake up. They caught on to the pace. They started to push the tempo of the Raptors a bit more. They got to get the ball inside more, in my opinion. But they were right there. There was just these little lapses in which, you know, the right near the end of the first half, Cleveland hit a bunch of threes. From what I hear right now, Mark, and you know, it's tough to gauge what an NBA lineup is going to be. Trust me, we know over here at the Fantasy Sports Network all about that. But, you know, the Raptors adjusted in the first series against the Bucks, and they went small, and it worked for them. We're hearing that Casey's going to really shake things up tonight. JV's out. Poeltl's going to be in, the kid from Utah. He's going to be in, and Norman Powell's going to get back on the floor because they need points. They got to trade with Cleveland. So expect to see Powell and Poeltl in the lineup tonight, actually. And I got to tell you what, man, and even though the Raptors have lost by 21, 19, 38, and 11 the last four times at the Q, I think this is a close game tonight. I really believe it.
It is because of one main reason, Gabe. That's the fact that Cleveland's no longer playing defense. That's what led them to the NBA title last year. They out-defensed Golden State. They're not playing that brand of defense this season nor so far in the playoffs. That could open the door for Toronto tonight.
And in fact, Mark, I brought it up. I don't have to tell you this because you already know everything. You know, you're like God. You know all. But
My database does.
Yeah, your database. Yeah, you're right. It's a good way of putting it. If you knew everything, you'd be richer, right? You'd have Fifth Sporting Almanac. You'd be 100% winners. But I have to tell you, the Cavaliers are the first team to sweep a playoff series and give up 100 points in every game since the Houston Rockets in 1995. So now here they are, 5 games into the playoffs, giving up 100 or more in every game. So it leads me into the total here tonight. It's 213.5, Mark. It's hard not to like the over when you consider that they've given up 100 or more in all 5 playoff games. And the fact is the Cavaliers have scored 108 or more points in 9 of their last 10 home playoff games.
You got to look to the over in this basketball game, Gabe. I think the focus for the Cavs won't be 100% as LeBron James might want it to be. And I think also what we talked about handicapping Toronto, looking for them to step up with a better game in Game 2, I think that also builds to the over in the total in the game.
This is pretty crazy as well. In fact, the last 4 times the Raptors have played in Cleveland, 108 points was the lowest amount they gave up. Wow. So, you know, Cleveland scores on them as well. Rockets and Spurs, and I think you and I are on the same page here because I saw your numbers in the coffee club here. Spurs, 31-17-1 against the spread at home off a playoff loss.
Yeah, and a mean playoff loss that was. That wasn't just a loss. That was their worst loss, maybe under Greg Popovich in the playoffs on their home court. Really, really puzzling what happened in that basketball game. Everything that could have gone right for Houston did. Everything that could have gone wrong for San Antonio did. It was a collision of two forces that came together in one basketball game. I think Houston pays the price here tonight. As we said in the coffee club, Houston, you may have a problem tonight.
Here's something from the Morenci database. The Houston Rockets haven't won back-to-back road games in the playoffs since 2005.
Yeah, that's 5 times in a row that they've won a game on the road in the playoffs. Failed all 5 times the next go-around. Make it 6-for-6 tonight.
Ugly stuff at Fenway a couple of nights ago, Mark. Real ugly stuff. Last night, yeah, they applauded Adam Jones. It felt insincere. I've heard louder applauses at strip clubs at 3 in the afternoon. It was sort of, yeah, we better clap because America's watching type of deal. But Red Sox won the baseball game. They're playing again tonight. And it's I don't know, these two teams really don't like each other either. You know, they keep on throwing at Machado with the, you know, the Pedroia stuff. It keeps on going. Sale threw at him again. They won back-to-back 5-2 games. And something I noticed about these two teams, I was like, oh, that's interesting. You know, one team won 5-2, the next team won 5-2. Last time they played before that, it was 6-2. But they've actually gone under the number five straight times in this series. Tonight, it's Gausman and Pomeranz on the hill.
Gausman can't get out of his way thus far this season, Gabe. He struggled in the spring. He's struggling again right now. He's out on the road trying to find it. I don't think this is the right spot for him here this evening at all. I'm going to stay at home in this baseball game, in this contest with the Bo Sox here as well. And I don't know personally anything about what the atmosphere is like being in a strip club at 3 in the afternoon. Maybe you can fill me in.
I thought you were going to say about at Fenway.
Oh, okay.
At Fenway. So have you been to Fenway? Which one have you been to, a Fenway or a strip club?
I've been to a strip club.
Well, first off, Marquette, you weren't fooling anyone. And
as I understand.
You're from Cleveland, and you live in Florida now. I mean,
yes, I do.
Yeah, I mean.
Next to Vegas, it's the home of strip clubs down here.
But yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, how far from your home when you get in your car do you drive before you see the first topless club?
Well, I see two or three of them on the way to the racetrack at Gulfstream every Saturday. I can tell you that.
Racetracks. I was going to say you've never been to a racetrack either. Hey, speaking of which, I'm glad you brought that up. My thing, speaking of Florida, my thing, Mark, is always I always bet the winner of the Florida Derby. Yeah, last year, Nyquist got it done. 10 times in the last 50 years it's happened. This goes back to Thunder Gulch, who's my favorite horse of all time. I scored big. I won the Florida Derby as a big guy. I think he was 12-1 at the Florida Derby, 22, 25-1 at Kentucky, etc. That was my most epic horse racing run ever. So I've always just ridden the Florida Derby winner. But I was saddened to see that Always Dreaming was actually the favorite. You know, I don't like that everyone liked him.
He's not going to be the favorite when they go off here, though, Gabe. There's going to be, in fact, I think he might even be the third choice in this horse race here by the time it goes to post. But I do like his chances here. He's a lightly raced horse. Vinny Viola, the owner of the Panthers, owns this racehorse. He's a big, big horse racing fan. He's in good hands with Todd Pletcher. Pletcher struggled in the Derby. There's no question about that. He got off the schneid a couple of years ago, but he's still the best trainer in America. You could say him or Bob Baffert. I'd probably vote for Todd Pletcher. He has more better horses, a better stable. I think you have to watch Always Dreaming. He will hit the board. Whether or not he wins or not remains a question here, but I got to put him in my playlist for the Kentucky Derby Saturday.
You know, it's interesting. I saw that the horse Patch, of course, One Eye Horse, another Pletcher horse, has a Twitter account, like a lot of horses do. So I started following Patch. Patch, follow me back. So, Patch in the Kentucky Derby. Poor Patch got one eye. Poor Patch got, well, forget about the one eye. I don't mind the one eye. He's focused. You don't need blinkers. It's fine. I don't mind the one eye, but I don't like the 20 post, Mark. I don't like that 20 spot.
No, I don't think at all, and I don't know what eye is going for that horse, the right or the left. I don't think it matters when you're out on the 20 post, irregardless. I don't know if the horse will factor in the race. He's run a pretty good career, steady horse. He's run really well in the Derby trail getting here, but that 20 post is really kind of, I think, a throw-out for me in this race.
All right, we got to get out of here, Mark, but can you throw a couple of horses at us that you're taking a look at, maybe for some exactas,
trifectas? Well, you know, I would love to, Gabe, and I'll have to tweet you or I'll mention it in the coffee club because I haven't really truthfully done my homework here thus far. I'm going to get in it this afternoon, so I promise you I'll pass it to you in the coffee club. Yeah. You can pass it on to the fans.
Well, that's it. The numbers, the posts were just released. Good stuff, Mark. We'll be looking forward to that later in the week. Thanks for the time, Mark.
Hey, my pleasure, Gabe. Be good. I'll catch you next week.
There's Mark Lawrence with us. Another Mark Lawrence note. Mets and Braves tonight. Cologne won four straight starts versus the Mets. DeGrom has struggled. Mays lost four. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I'm Gabriel Morenz. There's a ton of stuff to get to with Chris Meany. What's going on, Chris? How you doing?
Doing good. Happy to be here.
All right, Chris, let's start off. Philadelphia Eagles draft. A lot of talk about the NFL over the last couple of days since the draft. The Eagles draft kind of flying under the table, pardon the pun. But because they drafted 14, nobody really looks at the middle,
right, so
to speak. And the fact is, it wasn't a sexy draft per se. Not a flashy draft, not a lot of big college names, but a very efficient draft as far as I'm concerned. You know what, Chris? I had Derek Barnett. I'm not Mel Kiper or Mike Mayock, but I had Barnett as the best pass rusher available.
You weren't the only one to have him.
I had him going to the Bengals at 9, so I think it was a bargain getting him at 14. With Greg Williams in here, he's teaching some nastiness.
Absolutely.
You get Sidney Jones, DB Washington, tore his Achilles at the combine, but very athletic kid, good football player. Douglas, big, tall corner, long arms.
Yeah, great ball skills, too.
Yeah, great ball skills. Hollins out of North Carolina is a gamble to me. We don't really know. It could be a steal.
All anybody in Philadelphia is talking about him is special teams, and they're very excited about his special teams play.
We didn't catch a lot of balls.
No, and they think he can contribute for special teams, and he could be somebody later on. I mean, there's a lot of wide receivers, Aguilar, Green, Beckham. These guys are basically done. You see, the upside is not too high with them, so I like the gamble. And you're talking about, you're going through it. There's a lot of value. I think
Donnell Pumphrey's another player, a nice acquisition. Now don't. You're going to hear, he's too small, he's too small. Listen, the guy's the all-time NCAA rushing leader.
Yeah.
Right? He carries the ball all the time. Now, I understand it's a little bit different getting hit in the Mountain West Conference than it is in the NFC East. But with that being stated, this kid runs with a chip on his shoulder. He's going to be a great third down back and a natural progression from Darren Sproles.
Yeah, and, a lot of people are, he's not going to be ready right away. Well, you know what? Jones is not going to be ready right away either. I like what the Eagles
Pumphrey's
did
ready
because...
Right away. This guy's going to be returning kicks right away.
Sure, but he's not going to be carrying the ball 10, 15, 20 times a game because they have a lot of backs there, but he doesn't need to. He got one more year from Darren Sproles. That's all the comparisons are. And you get Darren Sproles this year, and it's a great guy to learn from, and he's going to step in and fill that role next year.
Very reminiscent of another kid, actually, that comes from the same part of the country, Tyler Irvin.
Right, yeah.
Kid on the Houston Texans.
Very,
very, very similar.
Similar. We saw a little bit from him last year, yeah.
All right, so let's talk some basketball. You're a big LeBron guy, and you feel as though that I'm a LeBron hater.
I only said that because originally you were thinking Pacers could beat them, and I was like, listen, Gabe.
They gave them all they can handle.
So what? How many games did they win?
They covered every game.
I don't care about that.
That's all I care about.
LeBron.
That's all we care about. Like, what show are you on here?
I get it, but you were saying that you thought
that
there was a chance.
Who covers the spread.
Yeah, sure, but at the end of the day, they're winning the ball games, and they swept them.
109-108, they were close
and
games.
And just like last year in the first round when they played the Pistons, all those games were close too. And what happened? They swept all into the Eastern Conference Finals
right
and then into the finals.
Raptors are going to keep this one close tonight.
Are they going to win? Are the Raptors going to win the game?
Maybe.
Do you have confidence to take them on the money line?
Maybe.
The Raptors are going to show up tonight, Gabe. I agree with you.
The Raptors are going to lose by less than 7 tonight.
They're not going to win the game.
I was about to be all nice to LeBron James, but now he's pissed me off. So I'm like,
I think you get him fired up.
I was actually going to say, it's crazy, but LeBron might be underrated. And it really is true because everyone talks about Russell Westbrook and all of what Harden does, Kawhi Leonard, look at Durant, look at Curry, etc. But we take LeBron's greatness for granted in which he just puts these numbers up consistently on a yearly basis. And he really raises the level of his play in the playoffs, too. It really proves his unselfishness, actually, in a regular season because he really could put up the type of numbers that Westbrook does, but he's not, he doesn't have to, and he's not the same type of person.
Yeah, you're right, Gabe, and he is actually underrated, and it's crazy to say. I mean, this guy just reached 50,000 minutes for his career, and he's still putting up, 40-point nights with 10-plus rebounds. You get the triple-doubles. He's going to finish this playoffs as number one all-time playoff scoring. He's like 200 points behind at all time, and it's like that's like 5-6 games for him if he wants
seven consecutive finals if they make it?
Yeah, so I understand the hate for LeBron, and it's hard to defend him at times, and even him crying about playmakers this year really bugged me because I thought he should have kept that in-house. He didn't need to relay that to the media, but what he does and just flicking the switch, and they did. They flicked the switch. They struggled down the stretch. They were like 22-21 in their last like 43 games. But he just flicks on that switch. No, they don't play defense. They don't play it well at all.
I mean, we keep on talking about their first team in over 20 years, 1995, to sweep a playoff series and give up 100 or more points in every game. All right, so let's talk about the Capitals and the Penguins right now. We had Bill Waters on earlier in the program, former assistant general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, longtime broadcaster and player agent. And he didn't hold back. He said that Alexander Ovechkin is a scumbag who should go to Russia and never come back. That he should have been investigated and potentially suspended for the vicious slash to the back of Sidney Crosby's neck. And
it was on his arm.
He got it.
He slashed his arm pretty good. And the whiplash came over.
He got him in
the
back, close to the neck. Hits him over the head with the stick and the helmet. I don't know what it is you guys watch around here. Like, is Sidney Crosby a Donald Trump pinata at a Cinco de Mayo party?
Sidney Crosby is one of the dirtiest players in the NHL.
Irrelevant. It's irrelevant whether he's dirty or not. Ovechkin swung the stick like a freaking
like Crosby did to Mathot. He swung the stick like Crosby did to Mathot and almost took his finger off.
We can't go back and litigate past circumstances.
So let's get over the fact that what just happened. I mean, Crosby took a slash to the arm, and that's probably where it all happened. If he doesn't take the slash to the arm and fall down, Niskanen hits him in the shoulder, Gabe. It's a fast sport.
Right, you know what?
It happens quickly,
man. We got to get Meany back in studio later in the week. We got to start doing some demonstrations here. We got to get a hockey stick, and we'll use camera two Drew as the dummy. So we'll slash Drew, like in the back, the arm, and we'll use a definition of what
it was. It was a bad slash. I'm not going to sit here and defend Ovechkin and say it wasn't a bad slash. It was
a
bad slash.
Was worse than a damn Niskanen hit.
Of course, because Crosby fell into Niskanen, basically. It was a hockey play, Gabe.
Yeah, but why did he fall into Niskanen?
Yes, because Ovechkin slashed
him. Because he got hit.
Yes, and I'm not saying that he didn't slash him. He slashed him, but to say that he is a scumbag and dirty, and to not say what Crosby has done in his career, slash guys, stick them in the groin area. He's done a lot of stuff, and he's taken a lot of abuse.
Sidney Crosby's a good Canadian kid. Alexander Ovechkin, he's from Russia. I mean, it's all we need to say. Who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy here? I'm just kidding right there. They both play hard. Who do you believe has more lack of respect for their opponent, Crosby or Ovechkin?
Crosby.
I would disagree.
Ovechkin throws his weight around and hits, but how many times have you seen him stick or slash anybody?
But they all slash now. That's what they all do.
So what's wrong with Ovechkin then? He took a two-handed take a scoring play away.
Nobody gets slashed more than Crosby does.
Maybe, yeah.
You played against Crosby and you slashed him.
Sure, absolutely. Unfortunately, it's part of the game of hockey, and there's no way to take it out. Look at Johnny Gaudreau. This guy broke his hand
a
couple
of
times.
Allow people to fight. Take out the instigator.
Yeah, so take out the instigator. I agree with you 100%. And that's why you're not seeing when Kadri took a run at Ovechkin in the one series, what happened? Absolutely nothing.
Where's Niskanen from anyways?
Yeah, nothing. And Niskanen and Crosby have fought before, so maybe there's a history there. They dropped the gloves. They played. They were teammates before. Crosby was well-known not to say he didn't. They were both well-known to say they didn't like each other. There's probably a history there. I'm not saying that. It was
not
deliberate.
What did Don Cherry say about this?
Yeah, he said that he had complete rage. He was all over Ovechkin like you were. But so what?
When's Don Cherry wrong?
Come on. Don Cherry's wrong almost every single night. Don Cherry's wrong almost every single night. Listen, Don Cherry.
Thank you, Warman. I thought Niskanen was like a Swede or something or a Finn.
No, he's American.
I sounded like Don Cherry.
I was shocked to see. What did you think of the Ovechkin? What did you think of the Kadri hit on Ovechkin? You think that was clean? You think that was fine?
That was dirty.
What did Cherry say about that hit? He thought it was perfectly fine. He thought there was absolutely nothing
Don
wrong with
Cherry's
it.
Don Cherry's the biggest hypocrite in the world, though.
Exactly.
When PK Subban points at the logo, he deserves to get punched in the face. When a Leaf does it, Ramgeesnik does it, JVR. Oh, he loves the organization. He's got heart.
So that's what I would have said when he was defending Kadri and said that was a perfectly fine hit. But if it was flipped the other way around and maybe Beagle or Wilson went at Matthews like that, he would have been like, you got to drop the gloves.
Who wins the game tonight?
Washington, Pittsburgh's in deep trouble.
I can't disagree with you there. Ducks and Oilers.
Yeah, I still like the Ducks. I mean, I'm confident. I saw game two. Talbot played unbelievable. He stood on his head. He looked shaky in that third game. They're playing good hockey right now, the Ducks. And I need to see a little bit more from Connor McDavid. I mean, what does he have, 6 points here so far in the playoffs? I'm not thrilled.
What's that postseason experience? Ryan Getzlaf's carrying his team right now.
He's been unbelievable. Yeah.
And you know what? I was sort of leaning with the Oilers, young team. They take the first two games. Oh, there's going to be pressure. It was a flat spot for them going back home in game three. But the fact that the Ducks are underdogs once again and still a desperate hockey team, I got to go with that experience. They win again tonight. Then it becomes a best 2 of 3. We come back with our DraftKings lineup. Sidney Crosby's not in it because he got cheap shotted out. Game time decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Let's get to our NBA DraftKings lineup of the night. Another two games on the board this evening. Let's start off with my man, Kyle Lowry. All right, Kyle Lowry, he's been under the gun. He's often criticized, and when the Raptors lose, he shoulders the blame for the most part. But a lot of jackasses probably don't realize he's been putting pretty solid fantasy numbers up along the way. 20 points, 11 assists in game one. Nothing wrong with that. 42 DK points. I think he scores more tonight. I say Kyle Lowry's going to drop like 24 to 30 points this evening. He's going to hit some threes, and Kyle Lowry's going to go off for 50-plus DK points this evening. All right, the San Antonio Spurs, they're going to need Danny Green to hit a couple of three-point shots. Houston rained threes, man. What was it, 22 of them the other night? This thing's a three-ball competition. They need Green on the floor, and he was on the floor in game one. He took 9 three-point shots. If he can hit more than two of them, then we'll do a little bit better. But at $3,600, there's no reason why he can't give us 15 to 20 DK points tonight. I expect the San Antonio Spurs to play much better, and I think Green hits a couple of threes. How do we not put LeBron James in the lineup, man? Went off for 35 points, 10 and 4 in game one. Finished with 58 DK points. Man, it's basically, I expect him to have a bucket with confetti tonight. It's like watching the Harlem Globetrotters with this guy. All right, word on the street is, JV's going to get benched, man, and Jakob Poeltl is going to get some playing time tonight. So for $2,000, got to be in the lineup. Patterson, man, this guy pisses me off. He never hits a freaking shot, but $2,700. He gave us 15 DK points the other night. Kyrie Irving's a stud. Kawhi Leonard's going to go off, man. Kawhi Leonard put up 48 DK points in 32 minutes the other night, and we wrap it up with Ryan Anderson hit 4 threes. As far as our plays of the day are concerned, Toronto Raptors going to keep this one close. Give me the 7 points. Toronto Raptors and the Cleveland Cavaliers. How's this not going to go over the number? The Cavaliers given up over 100 points in all 5 playoff games so far, and the Raptors have never given up less than 108 points in Cleveland in the playoffs. Give me the Spurs to bounce back tonight against the Rockets.